guys, welcome back to another episode of Rethink, where we're just trying to rethink how we think about everything in light of what God says is actually true for us as men. I'm joined today by some of you. He's a familiar face. If you're around this summer at Flatirons, Jay Kim was here and guest spoke for us, author of Analog Church, and that's just a reality. The online church, the online world. And so, Jay, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks so much.
Conversation, Jim, about a lot of stuff that I don't know anything about. I didn't even know how to turn this on. Micah did it. So I am really the dumbest guy in the room. You just took over a lead pastor position. Where are you at right now?
Yeah, I'm on staff at a church called Westgate Church, multi-site congregation in Silicon Valley of California. So right in the tech epicenter of the world. Yeah,
that is the epicenter. So how did like the online world become such a, like, a, I don't know, you're an expert in that area. I know all of us had to learn online world when COVID hit, but this, you've taken this to another level where you figure some things out about online. Like how did that get your interest? Were you thrown into it, or has it interested you for a long time?
Yeah, I mean, one, I grew up, I've been in the Silicon Valley my whole life, a single mom. So we lived with my uncle and his family when I was growing up, and he worked at IBM. So we had these, you know, big, clunky personal computers all over the house. So I've kind of been surrounded by it. Now the church where I serve, the campus where I teach primarily most of the time, it's 10 minutes from the main campus of Apple, you know, the big giant spaceship headquarters. So
I've heard of them.
Small little company called Apple. I don't think this is an overstatement. I'd say probably one out of four people in our church either work at Apple or are one or two degrees of separation removed from someone who works at Apple. And then lots of people work at Google and Facebook and a bunch of startups. So the overwhelming majority of our church, at least this campus where I'm sitting right now, work in tech. So I'm surrounded by people who are working on the stuff that are just like in our back pockets all the time. And I've always been fascinated by the industry. So I have conversations all the time with people in my small group and just other congregants and friends here at the church. So I've had an interest in it in a long time. And then when our church started going multi-site about, 8 years ago or something, you know, we started having all sorts of conversations about technology because we needed to leverage technology. And then that got me thinking about, okay, the technology is super helpful. It's great because it allows us to do X, Y, and Z.
Right.
But I didn't feel like we were asking enough about what that technology was doing to us, not just what it's doing for us, but what's it doing to us. And then that led me to thinking about my own life and just what is this technology doing to me? You know, not just, I know what it does for me, but what is it doing to me? So I've been thinking about that probably pretty intentionally now for the last, you know, 6-7 years. And I think it's a confluence of things. I live here. I talk about it with people all the time. And then our church's story has kind of led me down that path.
All right. So let me talk about that, because what it's doing to us. I know what it's doing for us. I have campuses spread out all over Denver, and then we're about half of our, what we would call our attendance, is live on a campus, and half of it is watching online somewhere else. All right. And I live in attention of that, because like, I want them to be in an incarnational experience. All right. But I also know that the world's changed and COVID's changed, let's talk about that. What is it doing to us? What are we losing? And then we'll get into what we're gaining, but what are we losing by saying, I go to Flatirons, but I only go online and I sit on my couch? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I have a definite, it's better than nothing, I guess.
Yes. Yes.
All right. But like, is saying that half of your church now attends one of your facilities either never or once a month, and the other times they watch online, what is that doing to us? What have we lost in that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Jim, and we'll get into what it's doing for us and some of the good of it, because I actually do think there is some good, especially now, in some strategic ways that especially pastors and church leaders can think about online. But in terms of what it's doing, you know, to us and how it might be detrimental if we're not intentional, there's a lot to say about this, but maybe the primary thought that comes for me to me is, you know, digital interactions are commerce and content based. So when you go on any digital platform, literally any digital platform, be it social media or Amazon or Netflix or whatever, whether you name it that way or not, what's actually happening in a physical way is the exchange of content and commerce. You right. go online to make an exchange. You give your money or your time or your focus in exchange for particular types of content, right? And sometimes it's ordering physical content that gets delivered to your house. Sometimes it's consuming entertainment content on social media or information content on news media on whatever app you choose to use. But it is primarily a content exchange platform. So the danger of that, if we're not intentional, is that if we begin to think about church simply as an online viewing experience, then you are, whether you know it or not, you are thinking of church primarily as a content exchange. You're right. going to the marketplace of Christianity to find the best content and to consume that content. Now, what I will say is that's not in and of itself bad. Great Christian, gospel-centered, Christ-saturated content, great sermons, music that lifts your soul and pushes you toward God. You know, that stuff is really important,
sure.
but it's just incomplete. There's more to the Christian life than just consuming content. Content should catalyze us toward transformation, but content by itself cannot actually do the work of transformation. That sort of thing has to happen through participation. You know, I can sit at home and watch every YouTube video on CrossFit that I want to, but if I don't physically go and do the work, my body will never change. I'll just know all the stuff, you know, but knowing the stuff is important. Like if I don't know how to do the exercises, then, you know, I can't get started. So they play, you know, into each other for sure. But that's the first thing that comes to mind, that we begin thinking about church simply as content.
That's good. So one of my greatest claims to fame is I was sitting in class back in October in New York City, and my professor was Tim Keller, which is not a bad teacher. And I asked him a question and he couldn't answer. I was like, that's my claim to fame right there. So I asked him, I said, so in online church, like we have people that call Flatirons their church. They live in other states. They live in other countries. But if you were to ask them, they would say, Jim's my pastor and Flatirons is my church, right? I said, how do we pastor people? How do we shepherd people? And is it possible for people to find life sharing authentic groups? So if you live in Montana and you call Flatirons your church and your kid has to go to the hospital, like how do you take care of them? And I said, has anybody figured this out? And he's like, not that I know of. and maybe you're going to go like, I know more than Tim Keller. That'd be great, right? But like,
well, no, I'm not going to say that.
Like, has anybody figured out a way to shepherd large groups of people spread across the country who call this your church? He's my teacher. He's my pastor, right? I mean, they'll even give online. But how do we take care of them remotely? Is that possible? And have you, what works and what doesn't work?
Yeah, it's a great question, Jim. First of all, it's Tim Keller. So what am I going to say? One thing I will say though, you know, as you've said, you know, I've been to Flatirons. I'm a big fan of Flatirons and a big fan of you and the team there. And so when I spoke at Flatirons this summer, I stood on the platform at the Lafayette campus, and there are literally thousands of people in there. Now they're physically in the room, and most, if not all, those people would say, Jim is my pastor and Jim's on sabbatical, so we got these guest speakers. But what I know, just because of human dynamics, is that you, Jim, don't have a deep personal, you've been in their home sort of relationship with all of those thousands of people. You literally don't have enough time in a day to do that.
That's right.
So in reality, whether it's online or in person, the concept of when someone has a child in the hospital or a death in the family or a real sickness and they need like the laying on of hands and a visit to the home in prayer, the reality is in churches of any size, but especially in a church as large as Flatirons, or, you know, our church is not as large as Flatirons, not nearly as large. But you would, most people would consider our church a large church. Sure. Well, the reality is, like, I can't physically visit every person. So in reality, you know, when I went to Flatirons, I remember walking out in that beautiful large lobby at Lafayette. There was a huge sign that said groups, you know, and a lot of people who are kind of cynical, they're like, oh yeah, that's the church doing the formula, you know, get into a group, whatever, right? That cynicism is toxic. The reality is you have to call things what you have to call them. Yes, you need systems for them. But the really ultimate reality is, because that is in partnership with a large gathering and great Christian content, getting into an intimate personal space with a group of 8, 10, 12, 15, 20 people, whatever it might be, or a life stage ministry, whatever. That's why that stuff is so important, because really for me, the question isn't if people are attending online, how do we pastor them? The question is just simply, if there are lots of people, how do we pastor them?
That's good.
You know? And, yeah, and really so good. I think it maps on whether people are watching online or not. So the question would be, okay, you're in Montana, man, we'll partner with you. We'll equip you. Could you gather 8 to 10 people who maybe watch and worship together? And then you meet during the middle of the week as a small group or a life group, whatever you call it, and do life together, so that when there's a death in the family or a struggle or whatever, you're there in proximity and you can lean into one another's lives in real ways.
That's really good. Yeah, the reality is, I think that, I mean, it is an illusion, but I think there's a felt, well, I could call on them because I'm in proximity, you know? And we're doing a big call out for groups. And I just finished up a men's retreat where the number one thing that men listed was, I'm lonely. I'd love to share my life with some other men that I trust. Then they all got on airplanes and flew across the whole country, you know? Like, I met people at that retreat who said, I've never been to Flatirons. I don't know much about that. I found you on Instagram and started following you. And then I heard about this retreat. And like, how much courage does it, I'm going somewhere with this, but how much courage does it take to see something on social media, buy an airplane ticket, spend $500 on a retreat, fly to Denver, rent a car, Google Maps your way up into the mountains, walk through a parking lot to a front gate and go, I'm here for this retreat. I mean, that man needs something, you know?
Yeah.
And I love what you said is, because we're working with our young adults, is they don't need another church service. They need to be equipped to leverage their platforms, right? So yeah, that man who drove down from Wyoming, or that man who flew in from Florida, whatever that is like, I need to equip him to be, I don't have a better term, to be an incarnational experience in Florida, right? Yeah. By gathering some other men around him, and they'll be the guys that show up at the hospital, because I won't get there in time. That's
right.
That's really good. Are there churches out there that you see doing this well?
Yeah, I mean, there are.
We're not above that.
Yeah, there are. I think I have a dear friend named Isaac Serrano, who's the lead pastor of a church about 30 minutes south of where I am. Multi-site church, 3 campuses, largest church in his town. It's sort of a smaller town, but large church. And there's many examples of this. I'll share one example that I just think is so profoundly beautiful. So multi-site campus, multi-site church, you know, lots of thousands of people and lots going on. obviously Isaac is the lead pastor, can't know everybody, all that kind of stuff. He's got a population in his church that's elderly, and many of them actually live in the same senior living facility, and many of them post COVID physically can't come to church anymore. They don't feel comfortable, or some of them like literally physically can't get out. And so what they do is they merge digital and analog in a profound way. They have a rotation of pastors on their staff. Several of them, they're not like, you know, gifted worship leaders necessarily, but they know three chords and they could lead a couple of hymns. So every single Sunday, one pastor will go to the senior living facility in the afternoon, take the communion elements, and there's about 12 to 15 elderly folks who are part of their church that can't physically go anymore. They don't know how to use digital devices. So the pastor will set up Isaac's sermon on the big screen TV in the communal room, and then he or she will lead a couple of songs, couple hymns, and they'll take communion together. They do that every single Sunday, and that is grossly inefficient. And this is a large church that doesn't need to do that, but they do it. And for me, it's like, man, that's the picture. That's the image. Sometimes as churches and as church leaders, you know, we get so locked in on growth and efficiency, and I'm not bashing that. I'm all about it. I try to push that with our team here, but there are moments, I think, where we need to say, hey, this is like God is inviting us to be ridiculously inefficient to be able to serve and love these folks well, you know? Yeah. And when large churches especially model that, man, to me, it's like so inspiring. It's really moving, you know? There are churches like that that are doing it well here.
All right, let me ask one more question, and then I'll kind of turn this a little bit. So I was at a conference back in January, and I heard Craig Rochelle says that he's tired of trying to talk people back into church, that we have, and at first that sounded harsh, but I get it. We have a lot of people over COVID who have found us online. We're registering more new families per week than we did pre-COVID, of people finally going, you know, okay, I'm back, or I want to try this church. We have space, we have money, we have opportunity. It's like, I don't know if I want to rebuild a church as much as I want to build from here on. Does that make sense? I live in that tension of going, like, I want people to come back, but not because I need to boost numbers. I really don't care about that. I really don't care. There was a day when it was my identity, right? I took a few months off and worked through that, right? So I really don't care about that. I do care about their kids. Like, so one of my good friends, and I shared this in church a few weeks ago, his name's Nick, and he has a 3-year-old, and he also has a 1-year-old. And he was sharing with me the other day, he goes, you know, we haven't been to church really in 3 years. When I was 3 and a farm kid out in Kansas, by the time I was 3 or 4 years old, I knew Jesus loves me and all these songs. My kids know nothing of that. And so I use that as a kind of a, not a leveraging point, but to build an argument is that, yeah, if you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, you can probably consume good content, make a great application sitting in bed, right? Or on your couch. But students need skin on skin, right? Children need community. And that's what we're missing. So my question is, do you think that people are not coming back to church due to COVID and fears, due to new muscle memories, getting out of the habit? And does online church actually reward that? Because our online experience is pretty good, you know?
Yeah, it is.
It's like, I have a 85-inch big screen TV at my house, all right? And they release movies at the same time that are in theaters. Now, I don't go to the theater anymore, you know? So have we actually incentivized people to not come back to church by having such great online experiences? Yeah. Is that just a dog chasing its tail, or, you know, is that a chicken egg thing?
Yeah.
Or what are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jim. First of all,
Flatirons. I have horrible answers. So.
First of all, Flatirons does have an incredible online service. Yeah, I have lots of thoughts on that. So I said it earlier, but there is some good to online, which I think is ironic. I've actually been criticized about this publicly because I've been public in some articles and interviews that post-COVID. I think I heard Ed Stetzer say this first, and I thought it was such a great line. He said, online is now the new lobby. And right when I heard it, I didn't need an explanation. I just knew intrinsically what he meant because we're living it here. So every single Sunday, literally every Sunday for the last year, I meet on average, just at this campus where I am now, I meet on average 3 to 4 new people. And that's average. And that's me like talking to people who are not new all the time. It's just in passing, 3 to 4 every Sunday.
Right.
And literally 100% of them, 100% of them tell me, yeah, I've been watching online for a little while, or I watched online, you know, for a couple months, and I'm finally here and feel like it's my church and I'm in. And so what that tells me is Ed Stetzer's right. Online is the lobby, which is why we're keeping our,
he's my professor and it's going to go right to his head. Ed, humble yourself. Ed, stay humble.
That's right. So, you know, I think that's why for us, we're committed to keeping our online service. Now, I understand the danger, so we try to communicate it really clearly. And we say it almost every Sunday. We have like a dedicated online host who does a little hosting segment while the sort of greeting time is happening behind him or her. And we do that intentionally. So there's a visual reminder, like there's hundreds and hundreds of people here. We'd love for you to join us, you know, but the online host is coached every week, scripted to say like, hey, we love that you're joining us online. If and when you're ready, we would love to see you here at one of our campuses. If you're out of town and you're looking for a local community, reach out. We'd love to help you find one kind of thing. So we communicate that in a way that feels like we're glad you're here. We see you. And there is a path beyond the room you're sitting in, which is like your bedroom or your living room. There's a room full of people who would love to meet you and do life with you. So, so that's one of the reasons we keep online. I think for me, when I think about, you know, you had that analogy about why do I go to a movie theater when I've got the big screen TV and it's super high def and it looks and sounds better and I don't have lots of people. I think that analogy is a fine analogy, and I've actually heard people like Kerry Newhoff, who I really like. I've interacted with him on this issue. We disagree, but I really respect and admire Kerry. You know, one thing that is interesting to me is that when online church is, you know, compared to other sort of industries, they are almost always, again, commerce, goods, and services industries. So people will say things like, if your church doesn't have a robust online offering, look at what happened to bookstores. Look at what happened to taxi cabs. Amazon and Uber came in and just destroyed those industries. That's all well and good. So if the church is only primarily about providing goods and services, Christian content, that analogy is exactly right. What I almost never hear from proponents of like a strictly online approach is making the analogy that a church is like maybe a school or a hospital, because nobody says, hey, let's get rid of hospitals and just do medicine online. Nobody says, let's shut down schools and every kid can just attend class on Zoom. In fact, during COVID, what we found was, and I found this as a parent of a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old, it was like, I'm glad we have Zoom, but this is not working for my kid.
Because
what I'm realizing is the education experience is not just the content.
No.
It's actually the environment of other kids and a teacher and having, running around and my son needing to climb a tree with his buddy Ian. Like that's all a part of school. And I think that's what discipleship to Jesus is. It's more like a school. That's what disciple means, right? It's a student, an apprentice, you know? So that's what I would say. Online is beautiful. It's a beautiful lobby. Let's make it the best lobby we can, but let's invite people to join us for school, you know, at the hospital if you need healing. So
that's so good.
That's kind of how I think about it.
Now, I'm going to contradict myself here as well, because I did a wedding a few months ago, and the groom hosted an online group of like 8 people from around the country, and they'd been together for 2 years. They met face to face at the wedding for the first time, and they were deep friends, right? Yeah. Deep friends. So I know it's possible. Right. And then one of our elders, Jason Martinkus, he specializes in sexual brokenness in men and in couples. Right. And pre-COVID, most of his clients were in the office. Mm-hmm. And now he moved to another state because he can maintain his practice, because 99% of it is actually online. So I know it is possible to go deep online. All right. What are the must haves? So we're really, really pushing people getting into groups and community and incarnate, you know, we want to move people towards incarnational experiences, right? We want people to be skin on skin around grills and picnic tables and whatever that is, so they can look into each other's eyes and talk. I'm starting a men's community nationwide. That men are spread out all over the country, but they need intimate relationships. Okay. Yeah. What are the things that you have learned in people finding intimate relationships, group relationships? I'm not talking about one-on-one, you know, dating sites. That's something else. but that's here to stay too. I'd say a lot of the weddings I've done in the last 5 years, when I say how you met, it was that. It really was.
Yeah.
But
yep.
What are the must-haves and the never-dos, I don't know if that's the right term, for online community building, for men or for groups in general? What are like the, if you're going to do this, it has to include this, this, and this, and please don't do this, this, and this, because it won't work. Have you got a list of those things? You're the expert.
Gosh. No, I mean, I'm definitely not the expert. I just someone who thinks about this kind of stuff a lot. I don't know that I have, you know, a sort of a monolithic, static, this is it, these are the do's and the don'ts. I think I probably have more just big picture approaches and awareness issues, right? So I think it's really important to be aware of, and this is, you know, I'm kind of repeating myself, but I think it's important to be aware of what online is actually for and what it's kind of designed to do. So online engagement like this, you know, we're having this conversation, we're a couple of states apart from each other, but we're able to, because of technology, have this conversation. What that means though is primarily we're exchanging information and content. That's essentially what's happening here. And again, as I said earlier, that's not bad, and it's actually quite helpful and necessary. And if there is enough rapport built over time on an online platform, I do think, because I've experienced it too, I do think it can go beyond just purely sort of information exchange. There can become sort of relational rapport developed over time. But as everybody knows, I mean, I love what you said earlier, Jim, like you're trying to get people skin on skin over a grill. This sounds overly simplistic, and maybe it's not everybody, but in my experience, it is the overwhelming majority of people. I think there's a very specific reason why Jesus, when he has his final meal with his best friends before his arrest and crucifixion, he doesn't leave them with a teaching or a song even. He doesn't leave them with, you know, like whatever. He leaves them with a meal.
That's good.
Right? And yes, it's the traditional Jewish Seder meal, but he reimagines it. And he says, when you gather, do this in remembrance of me. We have to ask the question, like, what is he asking us to do? It's very simple, to eat and to drink. And I think one of the reasons is because Jesus understands that embodied human beings remember best and transform most fully through embodied experiences, which is why Jim, if you and I were having this conversation over a grill with like a 12, you know, a couple 12 ounce ribeyes on the grill together, it would be, this is a rich experience, this conversation, but I could imagine just sitting with you for a couple of hours with a beer in hand and a steak and learning from you. And it would be a whole nother level of experience.
Yeah.
And most people listening don't need me to explain why, because you've been there and you felt it, right? I think understanding that online can't provide that, it's okay. And I think what online should do, I mean, your men's, you know, conference is a great example of this. There's a reason why guys traveled from around the country, because they knew intrinsically it's like, it's a different thing. I could probably get the content from Jim. Maybe he'll release the teachings from the conference online at some point, but they knew it's like, I got to get up there and breathe that mountain air, and whatever it is, whatever you did, you know, ride some horses or play football and get with guys and be shoulder to shoulder. So understanding that is really helpful. What it makes me think of is, like when I was at Flatirons this summer, that evening when I flew in, I FaceTimed my wife and my two young children. Super grateful that I have technology that allows me to see them. But what it did most was help me sort of reorient myself around my deepest longing, which was on Monday night to get on a plane, fly back home, and hold those little kids in my real arms and give them real kisses and hugs, right?
Yeah.
So I think, again, if online we can see it as a lobby, we can see it as an entranceway to more meaningful spaces, I think that's a healthy way to sort of position online in our lives.
Okay, so that's really helpful to me. I'm going to ask one more and we'll wrap this up. I want to come back and talk to you because there's a whole bunch of online questions going through my mind about not church, but dealing with your kids and protecting your kids and just the overwhelming amounts of dangerous, crazy stuff out there. But I'm gonna save that for another conversation. All right. So at 3 o'clock this morning, though, I got an email from a cop, a Denver cop, who says, I watch online, and I know a lot of other cops who watch online. What else is there for us? Right. And I think you just nailed it, but like putting a responsibility. So I know I have a responsibility on this side of the camera, right? Piping stuff out. So what would you say to that cop who says, listen, I'm in a community of people. We watch Flatirons individually.
Yeah.
But what would you tell him to do as the next step from consuming content?
Yeah.
I would say, I know what you're going to say because you just described it, I think.
Yeah. Right? I would say lean into that community. I would say expand your imagination and your definition of what you mean when you say church. So there's a decent chance that that cop, when he says, oh, when he hears the word church, what he thinks is Flatirons, the organization, Jim, my pastor, who preaches dynamic sermons for 35 minutes, and you know, Lindsay and Ryan leading music, and that's church. And then I also have my community. What I would encourage that cop is, no. Your church is all of that, including the community of Jesus followers that you are sharing life with. When you get together with those guys for lunch, when you get together with them for an early morning Bible study or a coffee, or on the golf range, whatever it might be, right? On the golf course, whatever it might be, like, that's church. The church is not a place. It's not content. It's not preaching. The church is a people, right? Ekklesia, called out people. People who are called out from their insular, inward-focused lives to proclaim the good news of Jesus, to embody the way of God's kingdom in real time with others, embedded into the family of God together. So that's church. So in some ways, I might encourage him if he says, like, I have a community. I might just encourage him and say, like, man, you're doing it. You are the church, and that's your church, right? Yeah. We're your church. That's your church. It's all a part of the same ecosystem. And so keep leaning into it. Yeah, that's what I would say.
You just wrote my sermon for next week. Thank you. and I heard I just got invited to Silicon Valley to drink beer and grill steaks at your house.
Come out, Jim. Come out. Seriously, anytime. I'm serious. We'd love to. What's that?
I was asking Micah. That's what Micah heard too, because Micah comes with me. We'll make him grill steaks, though. He's pretty amazing.
That's right. Let's go. Let's go. Yeah, please come out. We'd love to have you.
All right. And we'd love to have you back here very, very, very soon. Again, you knocked it out of the park when you were here, and I wasn't here. Heard great things about it, but you have a lot. You have a lot to teach us, and so just thanks for sharing your experiences. And we'll be praying for you out there in Silicon Valley. And yeah, we have a new friend. So thanks for your time.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you so much. Thanks, okay. Jim.
Love you. Bye.